We at the National Counterintelligence and Security Center, or NCSC, in the Supply Chain and Cyber Directorate, decided to begin a series of audio interviews with experts and practitioners from government, industry, research, and academia to add to our robust outreach efforts. These interviews and outreach efforts are designed to help reduce threats to key U.S. supply chains and prevent foreign attempts to compromise the integrity, trustworthiness, and authenticity of products and services purchased and integrated into the operations of the United States. The exploitation of key U.S. supply chains by foreign adversaries, especially when executed in concert with cyber intrusions and insider threat activities, represents a complex and growing threat to strategically important U.S. economic sectors and critical infrastructure. My name is Matthew Halverson, the Strategic Program Manager for the Supply Chain and Cyber Directorate. I will be conducting the interviews. It is our hope that this series of interviews will help educate people to the supply chain threats, and we hope it highlights the efforts of many to help mitigate these threats. We are using COVID protocols, and as such, these interviews will be conducted using teleconference software. Please excuse any audio quality challenges. Thanks again for listening in. Today we have with us Andrew Coffey. He is a deputy director with the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas, HIDA, program at the Office of the National Drug Control Policy, ONDCP. He oversees a number of portfolios to include policy development, intelligence and information sharing, and performance management. Prior to joining ONDCP, he held various positions in the private sector, advising clients around the globe on security and risk management. He holds a doctorate in public administration and policy from Virginia Tech and a bachelor's degree from Radford University. From 2016 to 2017, he was a senior fellow with the George Washington University Center for Cyber and Homeland Security. Thanks for joining us today, Andrew.
The invite. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Hey, so for those of us listening to the podcast, right, who may not know, can you give us a brief description of the role of ONDCP?
Yeah, sure. So the Office of National Drug Control Policy was established in 1988, and it falls under the Executive Office of the President. So we're one of the policy shops that's part of the White House infrastructure. And some of your listeners might be familiar with the term drugs czar. So that's the senior advisor on drug policy matters for an administration and the person that that I report up to. And we have a series of budget authorities. We develop the National Drug Control Strategy for every administration that guides the whole of government approach to tackling drug problems around the country, such as the opioids crisis, but certainly not limited to that. And a lot of our work involves reaching across the federal government on a day-to-day basis, and it's really a core aspect of what we do to ensure that we're all working towards some of the same goals to deal with drug trafficking and some of the public health issues that are affecting the entire country.
Now, where do you fit in all of that?
So within ONDCP is the HIDA program, the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas program. And I'm one of the deputy directors with HIDA. And HIDA is a grant program that was baked right into ONDCP when it was established in the late 1980s. And it's a mechanism for the drug czar to be able to identify areas in the country that are real hotspots for drug trafficking activity and money laundering activity. And once those areas are designated, they're then eligible for federal resources in the form of grant funds. And our real mission is to support and facilitate the work of multi-agency task forces investigating drug trafficking organizations. And by multi-agency, we mean task forces that have federal law enforcement participation, as well as state or local and tribal participation, to make sure that agencies across levels of government are working really closely together and are able to marshal their resources where it'll have the most effect when they're investigating drug trafficking and money laundering crime across the country. So that's really what our program is. that activity. And there are 33 designated areas across the country. And, you know, those 33 areas support on the order of around 800 task forces, depending on the year. And then there's also an intelligence and information sharing component that we have as well. So, you know, those 33 HIDAs oversee about 60 investigative support centers that that provide some of the intelligence support to the task forces and do a lot of the information sharing work that that Congress expects us to do. So that's another aspect of the program that, that I work pretty closely with.
So that's a pretty broad and big mission right there. How did you get started in this role?
Well, when I was in graduate school, I was looking for a dissertation topic like all graduate students and found a population that was willing to be studied. It happened to be the state or local fusion centers that were set up after 9/11. And in doing that work and researching that community, I ended up coming across the HIDA program because HIDAs and the state local fusion centers often work closely together. So was presenting my research, and someone in the audience happened to be from ONDCP and worked with the HIDA program. And so I've been there ever since, been there for coming up on 5 years.
Now, as we look at ONDCP, I'm curious what other offices or government agencies you guys work with?
Well, it really runs the boards. So, you know, all of the federal law enforcement agencies will either have liaisons or detailees in our office. So there's a direct line of communication from our front office to those agencies' headquarters. There's, you know, a number of agencies that touch the public health realm, and we'll have individuals from those agencies who also sit in our office and work with us. And then, you know, by virtue of working with the HIDA program, that's an avenue for reaching out and collaborating with state and local agencies literally across the entire country. So it's a pretty wide.
So, Andrew, ONDCP and NCSC in the Supply Chain Directorate, I mean, we really began working together based on one of the specific programs that you guys have. Could you talk more specifically and give us an introduction into the HIDA program, you know, what it is, what it does, and how long that's been around?
Sure. So the HIDA program has been in place since ONDCP was first created in the late 1980s. And the HIDA program consists of 33 areas across the country that are designated as high-intensity drug trafficking areas or locations on the map where there is a real concentration of drug trafficking activity and potentially money laundering, illicit money laundering activity as well. So once those areas are designated, then federal resources can flow through the HIDA program to those regions and support multi-agency task forces that are doing investigative work into the drug trafficking organizations operating in those areas. And so when an area is designated, they receive funding through the grant stream. But there's also some infrastructure that's put in place. So there's a local HIDA team that manages the flow of the funding. There's a director that oversees that. That director answers to an executive board, which is made up of local officials, law enforcement officials in that area. And that consists of senior federal law enforcement officials in that area, as well as state and local agencies. And they make decisions about how that money is allocated and what it goes towards in their particular designated area. And so that relationship is really critical because they're telling us what they need at the local level. And as long as that is in line with the conditions of the grant and the rules that are in place for dispersing those funds, they can have access to that. And it can make a real difference in what they're able to do to tackle those drug trafficking threats in that area.
So, Andrew, one of the things that we'd like to talk about here and comes up a lot is the National Defense Appropriations Act, NDAA, of 2019, Section 889. And as a refresher for folks, it prohibits federal agencies from procuring or obtaining telecommunications equipment or services and video equipment or services involving certain Chinese companies. Further, federal agencies cannot contract with other companies that have equipment or services from these prohibited Chinese companies in their corporate supply chain. Haida really identified this as an issue very early on. Can you explain to us, you know, why this became an issue for Haida?
Yeah, sure. There's a couple of reasons why this was something that we jumped on right out of the gate. And I have to say up front, a little bit of credit to our interagency partners. We had been invited to a series of briefings about supply chain threats. And that was not just limited to the federal government. It extended to threats that might also apply to state or local governments. And so because we rely so much on partnership with state and local entities, it was really critical for us to kind of be forward thinking about this issue and to try and understand how it might impact a lot of our really key partners at the Haida level. So I would say having that initial awareness of this issue and some intelligence on the nature and scope of the threat was really critical. And it helped us to understand some of the complexities of the challenge, but also understand that this could have some far-reaching impacts if we didn't act quickly. And one other aspect, too, is that our program was already going through a series of really important changes that had been headed up or you know, envisioned by the National Haida Director, who I report to. And because we were already in that mode, it was a little easier for us to quickly transition and incorporate NDAA compliance and NDAA requirements into the overhaul that we were already doing. So the timing couldn't have been better from that perspective. And then a couple of other aspects that are kind of unique to a federal grant program. Because we're a grant program, we know how tricky some of the financial regulations can be and how they can have sometimes a ripple effect on agencies that are receiving the grant funds. And, you know, a local agency might have its own vendors or its own contract structure, its own process for acquiring things. And then layered on top of that will be the federal rules that come with Haida funding. So we've been through that drill enough when new regulations are released. And we've had to integrate those and make those workable for all the different agencies that are receiving the funding and putting it to good use. And so that was another part of this for us. We understood that the implications of that law would have a series of financial repercussions at the local level. And I'll give you one quick example of that. With the way our program is set up, a lot of our grant funds flow to a state or local agency through a reimbursement process. And this just allows us to get the money out the door quickly, and it allows them to go ahead and make purchases and acquisitions that are really critical to their mission in solving the local drug trafficking threat. So because it's a reimbursement process, that means that there can be acquisitions that are made. And if we have regulations that come behind those acquisitions and they're retroactive, which in this case the NDAA requirements were retroactive, we could potentially be buying the same equipment twice, right? If the initial acquisition was made for something that was not compliant with the law. So that's why it was really critical for us to move quickly and make sure that we implemented as many new requirements, and we issued good guidance to the Haida community right away so that we wouldn't be dealing with, reimbursements for things over a, 1 to 2 year period. So that's a little insight into how we have to manage these types of things as a grant program, and it just allowed us to move really quickly.
So with that moving quickly, where did you start first, right? How did you start to address the issue?
Well, right out of the gate, we went to our network. So, ONDCP works really closely with the interagency, a number of different federal agencies, and we were able to reach out quickly and see if anyone else had taken initial steps to address this. We worked really closely with ODNI and NCSC, obviously, and drew from their experience and expertise on some of the threat picture. But we also realized very quickly that we were going to be doing a lot of this from scratch, and that there weren't a lot of templates or resources that we could draw from. Our own team at ONDCP, our legal team, our finance unit, they were able to do some research on what the law actually said, and help us, you know, interpret what some of the ramifications were going to be for HIDA. And then we really quickly tapped the HIDA network. So as a grant program, the HIDA, you know, management teams in each of these 33 regions, they've got folks who understand the financial piece in and out. The IT professionals understand, you know, implications if they're trying to source, you know, hardware and software, what you know, rules and provisions apply to them. So they were able to provide insight, and you all the way down to the task force level. The folks who are making the requests for new technology or new tool that can help them in their investigations, we gathered as much of that input as we could, and then we mapped a process that would allow us to quickly understand the implications for our current inventory, all the equipment that we've used grant funds to purchase. We wanted to understand if we were going to be compliant with the law based on what we already owned. And then the second piece of that was to come up with some guidelines and even things as simple as checklists for folks who are purchasing equipment with the grant funds to ensure that they were purchasing things that were allowable under federal law, under the NDAA. So I think that was really key for us, having a network of folks that we could tap. And having the relationships already in place to be able to do that, understanding what the implications were going to be from a legal standpoint and then from a practical standpoint. We searched our inventory and identified, we did actually find items that were prohibited under the NDAA. And so those items had to be removed and decommissioned. There's certain rules and regulations that apply for doing that. So we had to do it, you know, consistent with those rules. But then I would say the last piece and the most important one was the forward-looking aspect. In that we might be able to scrub our inventory today, but the next 30 days, the next 3 years, what kind of procedures can we put in place and what kind of guidance can we give to the HIDA community so that we're not purchasing things that we're going to have to replace down the road because of this particular issue. So. That was our approach, and that's how we navigated it. And I have to give a shout out to the HIDA teams that did a really exceptional job of responding quickly. They did a lot of the work themselves to identify areas where they needed to make a change in a procurement process or the way that they did acquisitions. And also looking within their own inventories and identifying things that might be vulnerable. And in many cases, they went beyond just the letter of the law and went for the spirit of the law, looking across the board and identifying areas where they might be vulnerable. So they were very quick to respond and react, and that made a big difference.
All right, so now I got a couple of questions, Andrew, that are kind of self-reflective. So the first ones are, of the policies that HIDA enacted, how have they been received? And while it's still early, can you discern, any successes yet?
So in terms of what we learned, very, very early in the process, because we had an established inventory program in place, we were able to do that initial scrub very quickly and identify if there were, there was equipment or services in our inventories that were no longer compliant with the law. So that initial piece could be done really quickly, and that really fell to the HIDAs themselves to do that initial check. And I have to say that even though we did encounter some pieces of equipment that were non-compliant with Section 889 and had to be removed, for the most part, we were able to have a fairly high level of confidence that our inventory was okay. What became more challenging, and I think what we learned and are continuing to understand, is that there were other pieces of equipment or other technologies that the HIDAs really relied on that may not have been prohibited under the law, but were produced by foreign entities or did not have all of the security protocols in place that we would like to see. And I think that's an area that we're looking forward to try and better understand how we can do some initial vetting on the front end and communicate that to some of the private sector partners that we work with so that the things that they're developing and providing us with are fully compliant with things like NDAA. And so for us, the challenge really has been kind of looking beyond those initial companies that were on the prohibited list, and even their subsidiaries, which the law encompasses, and focus more broadly on some of the core requirements and security aspects that need to be in place, regardless of who's manufacturing the equipment. And I think that's something that that we're learning more about, and I think we're going to be in a much stronger position to do that going forward. And I have to also point out that a lot of that is the HIDAs themselves and their local management teams working with state and local law enforcement agencies who have a fiduciary relationship to manage different aspects of the grant. And they've had conversations with vendors and explained that they're subject to this new law and these requirements. And those vendors have actually been able to pivot in some cases very quickly and source certain components from other vendors, from U.S.-based companies, or companies that at least have sufficient security protocols. We've heard back from one HIDA already that not only were they able to make that transition rather quickly, but they actually saved money in the process. And that was one of the concerns we had initially, is that by implementing these protocols and these additional requirements, the cost will be greater. But we actually have a number of instances where it's been the opposite. The cost has actually been cheaper because they're more engaged, they're having more conversations with the vendor community up front and explaining what the requirements are. And so there's innovation at all levels because those conversations are taking place. And at the end of the day, HIDAs are getting better equipment, better services at a lower price. And that won't always be the case. There will be times where it is higher cost to have something that is more secure, or that has a more secure supply chain. And we understand that, but we think that that's, if it's an informed decision and an informed approach, it's a good trade-off to make. So I would say that that's really a big success for us, that raise level awareness and more of that direct hands-on engagement that is actually creating more opportunities, opening up more doors, not just closing them.
Those really are some great successes, Andrew. Thanks for sharing those with us. So as we come to an end here, if people want to know more about ONDCP or HIDA, where should they go?
The easy place to go for information is whitehouse.gov/ONDCP. And you can navigate right to that page, and from that page, you can learn more about the HIDA program. We've got some basic information there, and it's a good resource for folks who want to know a little bit more about what we do and where we're located.
Well, Andrew, we really appreciate the partnership. We're really happy for the work that you're doing and the successes that you guys are having there. And on a personal note, I appreciate your time with us here today for the interview. It's been really enjoyable.
Thanks, Matt. NCSC has been a real help to us throughout the process. So we appreciate the partnership, and thanks for the invite.